Beis Hashem, in a couple more weeks, here in Eretz Yisrael, we will be experiencing a brand new era of time that I want to speak about Beis Hashem tonight, to go through the Inyanim, to understand what we're getting ourselves into, to understand what the Torah wanted to teach us. And I want to discuss the halachas of Shemitah, which is a halacha, and which is an Inyan, which all of us are going to be thrust into straight after Rosh Hashanah starts the year of Shemitah, as we know, which is coming up in a few weeks. Now the halachas of Shemitah are tremendous. Be'ez Hashem, we're going to be continuing this series of Shiurim, going on the halachas of Shemitah, ranging from where is a person allowed to shop, in which certain stores can you shop, in which stores can you not shop. When you do have certain foods that have in the yeshiva, or in certain places where you'll be eating over Shabbos, for example, how to treat the food that you will be eating has certain halachas which you have to adhere to. There's all sorts of halachas of wasting, there's the halachas of eating it in certain ways, cooking it in certain ways, in addition to the halachas of exactly how to deal with certain situations of when you're allowed to eat it, when you're not allowed to eat it, which hachshem you can, which you cannot. These are obviously halachas that we're going to get to in the coming shiurim, hopefully, maybe tomorrow, maybe Thursday, Be'ez Hashem, Yisbogah. However, tonight, as a hakdama to the Inyan of Shemitah, I think what we need to do is to understand for a few moments, what did the Torah want to teach us with the halachas of Shemitah? What is the year of Shemitah all about? What is the yesod? What is the foundation of what the Ribbono Shel Olam wanted from us when he taught us about Shemitah itself? There's a Gemara in Sanhedrin. The Gemara in Sanhedrin, Daf Lamed Tesav and Aleph, tells us, Omar HaKadosh Baruch Hu LeYisrael. HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells the Jewish people, Zo Sheish V'Shmitu Sheva Kedei Sheteidu Sha'oret Sheli Hi. Says the Gemara, tells us in Chazal, that a person can actually work his ground, his field, his sodeh, for 6 years. On the 7th year, stop. No more work. Why? Says Chazal, says the Gemara in Sanhedrin, to teach a person a tremendous lesson, which is the lesson we're going to learn tonight. And that is to realize that the land doesn't belong to us, and it belongs to the Ribbono Shel Olam. I want to speak about the Tamei HaMitzvah. What do we need to keep Shemitah for? What is Shemitah? What is the Yisoid of Shemitah? There's a Mordechai Kli Yakov. The Kli Yakov writes that the reason of Shemitah is Lahashwish es Yisrael b'midas ha'emuna v'habitochon. That means the one reason why the Ribbono Shel Olam commanded us to teach Shemitah, to have Shemitah, to keep Shemitah, is in order to implant in our insides, in our guf, in our body, in our leg, emuna in bitochen in the Ribbono Shel Olam. And it's a double portion. Before we go weiter, let me just tell you an example. Just imagine if a person has a real good, thriving business, a real chosh of a business which is going, a multi-million company, and they tell you that there's going to be a certain amount of time that you're going to have to close. Whatever that amount of time is, for whatever reason it is. Can you imagine what that does to your business? Can you imagine closing down your business for an entire year and saying, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will look after me? You know what that means? You know bitochen and emuna that you need in the Ribbono Shel Olam to do that? That, say Chazal, is the reason why HaKadosh Baruch Hu commanded us with the mitzvah of Shviyas. We'll get to that. Very good. The Sfas Emes also writes that we have to realize that Shemitah is teaching us a yesod that everything comes from the Ribbono Shel Olam. Not everything belongs to us. Not everything comes as a result of our personal labor and effort. Many things come from the Ribbono Shel Olam. And sometimes a person can go through 6 years without realizing it. And all of a sudden he needs a time on the 7th year to realize that, hold on a minute. Not everything comes because of me and my personal effort. Rather, the Ribbono Shel Olam has everything and instructs everything. The Kli Yakov explains to realize that a person has to realize as well that to instill a person with emunah and betochen, you need to keep Shemitah. Another Indian of Shemitah, let me tell you like this, interesting. During the year of Shemitah, however wealthy you are, however important and choshev you are, Nobody owns any produce of the land. We're all equal. I can go into any field that I want during the year of Shemitah and start picking up apples and pears and pineapples, whatever I want. Because everything belongs to everyone. Which basically means that we are all guests at the Ribbono Shel Olam's table. The yesod of Shemitah is to realize within ourselves that we're guests in this world and we're guests at the table of the Ribbono Shel Olam. That's the yesod. In fact, it's interesting, the man that gives up for the sake of the mitzvah of Shemitah, as we'll see, will give him tremendous bracha and tremendous reward. It's interesting, they actually tie into that, just like in the Midbar, when they didn't have anything well to eat, they had betochen in the Ribbono Shel Olam, they left Mitzrayim. They said, what are we going to have? They left with emunah and betochen pshuta. They left Mitzrayim with absolutely nothing except a little bit of matzahs on their back. And off they went into this complete wilderness, into this desert land over there with absolutely nothing. And because of their middle betochen, because they had such a gewaldige emunah and trust in Hashem, they were given spiritual food. They lived off the man and the slav and all the be'er. They lived off all the gewaldige nissim that the Ribbono Shel Olam made, just speaking out the Abdoma, and therefore they got the gewaldige betoch. And let me speak out a few things. I think a lot of the questions will be answered. The Abarbanel writes a tremendous thing, and he writes the contrast with Shabbos Kodesh. As we know, a person can work 6 days a week. On the seventh day we rest, we have a Shabbos Kodesh. What's a Shabbos? A very similar idea. Shabbos means I will work for six, and on the seventh I will not work. Which means I'm going to, on that seventh day, have emunah and betochen in the Ribbono Shel Olam. That's what Shemitah is all about, that's what it represents. The fact that we have emunah and betochen in the Ribbono Shel Olam, and that is obviously what the lesson of Shemitah is going to be. And there's tremendous brachas and tremendous klolos that can come to a person from keeping Shemitah as well. The Medrash brings down certain psukim and tehillim that say that if a person keeps Shemitah, then the prophet calls you malachim and you get a bracha from the Ribbono Shel Olam. It's a wonderful, wonderful schar for a person to keep the mitzvah of Shviyas. I want to share with you a couple of thoughts before we get to some very interesting stories to understand what is the middah of betochen and emunah that we're meant to be getting into, that we're meant to understand, and Shemitah is meant to be teaching us. Where is the makor of Shemitah in the Torah? So we'll start. In Parshas Bahar, the Torah says, Vayedaber Hashem el Moshe Bahar Sinai Leimo. HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Moshe where? At Har Sinai. Oh, Har Sinai. That was where the whole Torah was given, right? What did HaKadosh Baruch Hu tell Moshe at Har Sinai? Says the Torah, the Parsha of Shemitah. That's it! The Parsha of Shemitah! Frank Rashi Akasha! Hello! Everything was given in Har Sinai. Why Dafka Shemitah? What do you mean? This is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to Moshe at Har Sinai! Hilcha Shemitah. What about Hilchos Tefillin, Hilchos Shabbos, and Hilchos Tzitzit? Everything else! Why Dafka Shemitah? I heard that Rashi brings down the Kasha. Why do they specify Shemitah? Rashi answers, interesting answer, simple answer. Just like Shemitah was given in Har Sinai, so too all the mitzvahs were given in Har Sinai. Very nice answer. Beautiful, Rashi. What's the chat? What does that mean? Just because this one was given, so therefore everything. So why are you telling me Shemitah? Why don't you tell me something else?
Understand how important it is.
Oh, hitting most the nail on the head. Beautiful. I'm going to just sort of explain it and expand it a little bit more. Says the Chassam Sofer. The Chassam Sofer explains to us such a yesod b'Yisrael. We have to put this into our noodle and understand this in this entire year that we're going to have here in Eretz Yisrael. Says the Chassam Sofer, let me tell you why the Torah is specifically picked on Shemitah as opposed to all the other mitzvahs that it could have picked that HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Moshe and Har Sinai. The Yisod is like this. It's a powerful tool in Kiruv, by the way. And that is, it's not possible for anybody to claim that a human being, Rahman, wrote the Torah. Pashut not shaykh. This is one of the biggest riots that we have. Right? We don't even need riots. But we'll get to that later, Shev, on the story of the Chofetz Chaim. But the Maisa, again, I'm explaining the Chassam Sofer in a slightly different way, it doesn't say these words. But the Yisod of the Chassam Sofer is when HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, what are people going to eat? Right? People tying up. You know, I'm a farmer. In those days, they didn't have businesses. All they had was a farm and a field and apples and vegetables. That's what they lived on. Imagine not working your field. You know, posh, the whole thing dies. What are you going to eat? So the Torah deals with the Shaila. The Torah says, what are you going to do when you're going to say, hey, what am I going to eat? If I don't work the field, the posh are going to starve, my family's going to die, what's going to be? So the Torah, don't worry. I'm guaranteeing you'll have enough food for all the years, including the 7th year, including even the 8th year, until you get all your field back into its regular way. Now, which human being can promise such a thing and not found out that he's wrong after the first cycle of Shvi'ez? Pasha not Shayach. Zogdach Sam Sofa. The Yisod of Shvi'ez is a guarantee that it comes from the Ribbono Shel Olam, a lesson that this mitzvah Vadai was given in Har Sinai. And that's the reason, says the Chasam Sofer, we dafka were talking about Shemitah. Because once we know that this mitzvah was given in Har Sinai, every other mitzvah in the Torah, from tzitzis to brachos to tefillin to matzah to whatever it is, all of it were given in Har Sinai. That's the Yisod that the Chasam Sofer is trying to get out, which I think is a tremendous Yisod. Now, I don't have to tell you too many mitzvahs, but I won't tell you one mitzvah. Right? Shvi'ez has tremendous brachos. Right? Every year they come up with more mitzvahs. There was a farmer a couple of cycles ago in Shvi'ez, in a certain moshav here in Eretz Yisrael. He had a huge, tremendous amount of produce growing in tremendous amounts of field. He supplied approximately 2,000 tons of produce a year to a major supermarket chain here in the country. Now, thriving business. What happened was, right, he was a normal Israeli fellow. He learned in the Hesder Yeshivas. And therefore, by him, there was something called Heter Mechira. Now, I'm not going into the Shaila now. Do we have Heter Mechira? No, Heter Mechira. I didn't know anything about it. All I know is, I'll just give you a little bit of an example of what Heter Mechira means. Heter Mechira means that what we'll do is, we'll take a land that we own here in the country, we'll sell it to a goy, let the goy work it, and this way we can make the profits. Normally, I'm not allowed to work the land, but if I sell it to a non-Jewish person, then I'm allowed. Right? There's a Shaila in the post. If we do hold of it, we don't hold of it, we'll get to that in the Halacha Shurim. He decided he wanted to be lenient and he's going to use the Heter Mechira. However, his experience taught him a tremendous lesson. Listen to this, Obosai. This just shows us, not that we need proofs, but this just shows us how it's unbelievable that people actually realize and could feel the bracha that they got from keeping Shemitah. And he explained as follows. He said, last time it was Shemitah, the last cycle, he used the Heter Mechira, he lost his entire crop. Right, the entire tomato crop that he had was wiped out by a virus, and at that point it lost him such a tremendous amount of money. Decided the next Shemitah cycle, that's it, no Heter Mechira, I'm keeping Shemitah, no working in my land. That's what he decided. When the year of Shemitah, the next 7 years, approached, so he started realizing not so simple to keep his original promise, because his promise was not to work his land. That means his fruits and vegetables that he had in his field are all going to go to waste, and he's not going to be able to sell them, and he's not going to be able to give them to the supermarket. And he realized, when he called up the manager of the supermarket that he supplies over 2,000 tons worth of produce, and he told him, by the way, I've decided to keep Shemitah this year, I will not be able to provide you vegetables, the manager went crazy. What do you think you are? You're a bigger tzaddik and a bigger chosh of a person than the rabbanim that allow Heter Mechira, who told you to do such a thing, and you have to be more machmir than the rabbis that do allow Heter Mechira. And he went crazy. He said, I don't care. This was my promise last time. I'm keeping to it, I'm sticking to it. No, he comes home 3 months already before Rosh Hashanah, time is getting a little bit near, and the Yetzer Hara starts eating away at him, saying to him, you do realize this is not just this year's that you're not going to have any money, but what are you going to do for the year after, the year after, when you're going to be able to plant again, you're going to have to start a whole cycle again, it takes years to get back to the same adreg as you were originally. So he starts thinking, the parnosa, my family, my kids, how they're going to eat, what's going to happen. No, I'm not interested, I'm keeping the Shemitah, I made a promise, I'm going to keep it. That's what he did. That's what he decided. He said in those three months, he felt the bracha of Shemitah even before the Shemitah approached. So much so, it was actually amazing. What he said was, he said there was no logical explanation, but when he did his bookkeeping for the last quarter of the year, he found himself to have two or three times the normal profit. How did it happen? He had low expenses, whatever it was. Not only did he have enough to live off the entire year of Shemitah based on what he made the last couple of months of the year, but he actually said that if he would have gone with the Heter Mechira like he wanted to and not keep Shemitah, everything would have been destroyed. The Arab Intifada broke out on that Rosh Hashanah. The government blocked out the Gaza Strip. which means that all the Arab workers that he had to come to all his thousands of acres of field to cut everything down were no longer able to enter the country. Therefore, if he would have kept Heter Mechira and not kept the Shmita properly, all of his produce would anyway have gone destroyed. So by keeping Shmita in the right way, he felt he got the bracha of enough money to live off for the whole year of Shmita without having to lose all of his things. So there are those many, and there's stories and there's stories and stories about farmers that have felt the gewaltige bracha of Shvi'is. Let me continue, Rabbi Isaac. We've got some amazing things to discuss over here. The Torah comes along with an interesting guarantee. Says the Torah, as we mentioned before, the Torah says if a person, what are we going to eat during the seventh year? You know, we're human beings, we sustain ourselves on cucumbers and tomatoes and the money we make from that. Says the Torah, don't worry, I'll make such a bracha for you on the sixth year, you'll have enough to last. I saw an interesting kasha from Rabbi Lashav Zatzal. Rabbi Lashav asked the kasha, doesn't understand. What are you asking? We're holding by the sixth year. The sixth year, you haven't got to eat, plenty to eat. Rabbi, yeah. You ask someone the sixth year, you got fine. And about the seventh year, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave you a bracha. So what are you worrying about now? Elamai, the Torah understood that a person often worries even when there's no reason to be worried whatsoever. I'll tell you what, my son. A couple of days ago, I had to be Menachem Oval. I went to a Sheva house. And unfortunately, it was a very, very Nebuch situation. Very, very sad. A woman, a young sort of woman, was niftah, leaving behind 8 children, the youngest child, the age of 19, and a husband. And she left them. She was niftah, and they were all sitting in the house, they were sitting shiva. And I was listening to the husband, he was saying over stories of his wife, what his life was, you know, this midah, and this kabaldiga musa, whatever it was. One thing struck me as being very interesting, and that was as follows. He mentioned that she was ill for a number of months before she was niftah. And he said that I was tremendously worried, right, as any husband, la'aleinu, rahman al-islam would be, that his wife was tremendously sick, and he was very, very worried. And he told everyone over that his wife used to tell him, what are you worried about? If everything will be okay, so you stop worrying for nothing. And if everything, chas v'shalom, will not be okay, so why are you ruining the last few months of us being together as a family, with everyone together? Stop worrying, just enjoy life. And I think this is a tremendous yisoid that the Torah is teaching us over here by Shmita, that Rabbi Yashar Zatzal says. That the Torah is teaching, people often worry when there is no worry. And if a person works on the midah of emunah and bitachon, and trust in the Rabbeinu Shel Olam, and realizing that the Rabbeinu Shel Olam has the ability and the ratzon to do everything that you need, he's looking out for your best interest. He wants the best for you. Without a shaila, that Kodesh Baruch Hu put in this world and didn't put you on this world to have a fun game, to know, oh, throw him onto the world and let's see how he manages. No! The Rabbeinu Shel Olam put you on the world and you have to realize he's looking out for you. I want to speak a moment or two, and there are some great stories on the Inyan of Bitochon, which again, as I mentioned, Shmita is teaching us. The Chofetz Chaim was once by a doctor. And the Chofetz Chaim was by this doctor, it was a zman of war, it was a melchama, there was a war going on. People, Nebuch, Jewish people were being killed, were being injured, left, right and center. And this doctor turns to the Chofetz Chaim and he says, excuse me, Rabbi, you have a God. You have a God that you look up to, that you pray to, that you hold, he's looking after you. Why is he so silent? Where is he at this time of war? Why is he leaving you to be killed and to be murdered and to be, you know, everything else that's going on? So Chofetz Chaim turned to him with a very interesting question. And that was, how do I know that you're a doctor? How do I know you're a doctor? So the doctor says, what do you mean? Look at the wall. There's a beautiful framed certificate with his university diploma with all the nice fancy signatures over there saying that he was a doctor. So the Chofetz Chaim looks at it and says, excuse me, that was 35 years ago. So the doctor says, what do you mean? It's not good enough that I have a certificate that I was a doctor 35 years ago. What, you think I have to prove it to you every single day that I'm a doctor? Zog the Chofetz Chaim to the doctor. Ah, what a beautiful thought. Zog the Chofetz Chaim, the Ribbono Shel Olam thousands of years ago, prove to us that he's here and he does nisim and he looks after us. He has to prove every single day that there's a Ribbono Shel Olam. Absolutely not. And this is something that I feel that we have to work on in a tremendous way. And that is emuna in bitochen in the Ribbono Shel Olam. Let me give you an example. After the Second World War, there was a group of people that were actually working for the Vadat Solah. They used to help people who were being saved from the war. And they went from America to different places in order to help save Jewish people. And on the way back, his wife got a phone call from one of the people from the airport to say to him, "I'm sorry to tell you, but unfortunately that plane that your husband was on fell in the sea and there are no survivors." She came to Rav Aaron Cutler and she asked Rav Aaron the following shaila: should my son start to say Kaddish or not? And the Maaser Rav Aaron started thinking. He said, "Meichatesi, we have a shluach mitzvah, someone that went to do a chosh of the mitzvah. How is it shaya for him to have a hezek?" He said, "No, just be patient." Until eventually, a couple of days later, she got a phone call from her husband to say that he's living and he's well, Baruch Hashem. Now, just imagine what happened over there. What was the story over there? Let me tell you what happened over there. The story over there was as follows. The story was that this plane took time to refuel. It was this fellow had a yahrzeit, so he had to need a minyan to say Kaddish. So he went to the minyan to say Kaddish. By the time he got back, the plane missed the plane. Okay, obvious story, happened many times, Baruch Hashem, he was saved. Can you imagine what happened to him, what was going through his mind at that moment when he came back and he realized he missed his plane? "Oh, come on, I'm doing a mitzvah of saving people's lives. I went to go and daven for a yahrzeit to say Kaddish, and I have to miss my plane? Come on, it's not fair." If he would be practicing the midah of bitochen, if he would have in his brain set up in such a way that he realizes that everything comes from the Ribbono Shel Olam, and everything called the Ovid Yachmana Latav of it, everything HaKadosh Baruch Hu does is for our own good, then it would save him all the heartache and all the worry, because he knows that he's being looked after. Let me tell you a couple of gewaltige advantages and benefits that a person has from having such a bitochen in the Ribbono Shel Olam, and realizing that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is looking out for us and wants to have the best for us. Number one, peace of mind. Can you imagine when a person has a peace of mind? A person has to be worried, how is he going to pay the mortgage? A person has to be worried, how is he going to get a shidduch? A person has to be worried, how is he going to make this money? How is he going to do this? Everyone's got worries. But if a person has bitochen and he says the Ribbono Shel Olam is looking after me and I'll be okay, then the Mimela have so much more peace of mind. Everything will become much easier. His life will become much easier. That's benefit number one. Benefit number two of bitochen is a person can cope with frustration. Sometimes things happen to a person, they're not geschmack, he doesn't enjoy them, whatever it may be. But if a person has this midah of bitochen, if a person puts within him the emunah that the Ribbono Shel Olam is looking after him and everything will be okay, then he learns to cope with it. The Chayil Salabovitz brings a mashal, and he says the mashal is, if you have a mother, and the mother sometimes has to do things to her baby that the baby doesn't like, whether it be change the nappy, whether it be injections, whether it be medicine, all sorts of things. And the baby looks up at the mother and says, "How can you do this to me?" Without even realizing that obviously the mother has the baby's interests more than anything else. We have to realize that the Ribbono Shel Olam treats us as a parent. He wants the best for us. He tries the best for us. And obviously we have to treat it that way, and we have to put that into our heart. Benefit number three is HaKadosh Baruch Hu answers your bitochen according to the midah of bitochen as well. If a person, chas v'sholom, puts his trust into something else, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, "Oh, you trust that? Then that doesn't bother me. I'll let that thing look after you." I was reading a very interesting article this morning of a tremendously wealthy person in America that was a big, huge Baldstocker. Mamish, a Baldstocker, you can't even imagine. He just gave money to everything and anyone. No, he never said no to anyone. It's unbelievable. He said over a Maaser, he can't understand how some people don't give Stocker. You know, you've got very wealthy people that he personally knows who just don't give Stocker. He said it must be that the pleasure of calling up the bank and having this recorded voice saying to you, "Your balance is $27 million. That pleasure must be more than giving stocker to somebody else. There was once a time he was here in Eretz Yisrael in Yerushalayim, and he was in a certain Choshevah hotel, and he was giving out money. He sat in the lobby of the hotel, pushing, dishing out check after check after check. Mamish, unbelievable, but stocker. Word got out that this fellow is giving up money, you can imagine what happened, right? He got mumsh a line from outside the hotel all the way in. So eventually the security were letting in 10 people at a time. I got some ice. He was giving up check after check. And there was another very wealthy person, a little bit of a stingy person, didn't give much stock up. And he was there at the time, and he said to him, "Oh, why do you have to give stock up in such an ostentatious way, like in front of everyone, as if poking everybody out in the eyes?" So he said to the fellow, let me tell you what I said to him. He said like this. He said, "Listen here. You better have a really good excuse after 120 while you kept all the money for yourself and didn't give out to other people. Because if you don't, if you have such a good excuse, please share it with me, because maybe it will save me some money." What he was trying to say was that people often put their trust in their money, and they've got the money, they're going to keep their money. What you have to realize is you have to have emun and betochen in the Rabbeinu Shel Olam. When you do, then everything will be besaved. The Chovos HaLevavos is a very scary story. And that scary story is as follows. He says there was a scribe, a sofer, someone that used to write Sifrei Torah. And they asked him, "How's your business?" And he said, "As long as I have my hand, my business is okay." The next day, his hand got amputated. A person has to learn not to rely on his personal own effort, his own physical, his own effort that he puts into something. A person has to learn to rely on the Ribbono Shel Olam and have bitachon in the Ribbono Shel Olam. Let me give you a couple of maises that really show this halacha in a gewaltige oifen. There was a little girl, 5 years old, by the name of Lisa. And she walked into her house one day with a nice, beautiful silver cup. And she said to her mother and father, "Look, the Kosher Eliyahu, can we use it this year at our Pesach Seder?" You should have seen her parents' face. The father and father looked like they were actually going to explode. They had sent her to this Hebrew school somewhere because she happened to be friendly with some plum kid around the corner. And he thought maybe she'll come home with a couple of Hanukkah cookies or a couple of, you know, dip the apple in the honey songs. But none of this religious stuff. You know, she's coming back with, "Oh, we're making a Pesach Seder." So they started to go, "Oh, wow, what a beautiful thing that you made. Wow, I want to see it." And so she asked her father, "No, are we making a Seder this year?" And his father completely not even interested in knowing what Pesach is. To make his daughter happy, he says, "You know what? Okay, I'll make you a Pesach Seder." So he sits there. Pesach comes. He puts on his traditional gobble. He sits there, has a little bit of lettuce, has a little bit of matzah, and then he says, "All right, it's getting late now. I'd like to go to bed." His daughter says to him, "What do you mean?" She looks at the silver cup and she says, "Hey, we haven't done the Kosher Eliyahu yet." And he said, "He's Meshigga. He's all, I have to do this. I sat here at the Pesach Seder for you. I ate matzah because of you. I ate lettuce because of you. Do me a favor. It's enough's enough. I'm going to bed." Not only that, on his way out, he takes the silver cup and he slams it to the floor. And he goes upstairs. The whole night, till 1 o'clock in the morning, the Pasha can't sleep. He's tossing and he's turning, thinking about what he did to his daughter. "Oh, right, I must have upset her, I must have hurt her feelings." Finally, 1 o'clock in the morning, he says, "You know what, I can't sleep. I need to go see my daughter and see if she's okay and apologize to her." So he goes to his daughter's room, 1 o'clock in the morning, and she sees that she's not even in her bed. So he figures she probably fell asleep downstairs. So he goes downstairs to have a look, and the sight that greeted him, it completely shocked him. His eyeballs almost popped out. He saw his young little five-year-old daughter. She was looking at the window. Tears were streaming out of her eye. He said to her, "What are you looking at?" And she said, look. He said, "What are you looking at? Go to sleep." And she says, "No, you don't understand. Don't you see him? He's waiting to come in. And the father broke down with tears. And look at the emunah pshut of a five-year-old girl. How she understood, and she was told that Eliyahu HaNavi comes into the house, and she saw him by the window. That was her emunah and the betochen in the Ribbono Shel Olam. Let me give you another maisa. There was a certain Rav that was blessed with only one daughter in the time of Russia, when it was very difficult to be a Jew. And he was blessed with one daughter. And he went for a walk with this daughter one night to discuss with her what he wants from this daughter when he leaves the world. A very, very interesting conversation, but he decided, "I must have it with my daughter." And that was, he discussed with her that, "I want you to always remember that you're a Jew. It was the time of the communists. It was a time of a very difficult time to be Jewish, to be from." And he said, "Always keep the tradition. Always keep, you know," he had no son, no one to say Kaddish to him, "but promise me that you won't do anything to take me out of Gan Eden. Always make sure to keep Torah and to keep mitzvahs." And she said, 100%, I promise you, I'll do the best that I can." He turns to the bridge of the water that they were walking by, and he says to his daughter, "My dear daughter, let me just give you a mashal to explain to you what I mean." And he said, "You see this bridge over here? They were once building a bridge in a certain place, and there were hundreds and hundreds of engineers and workers working for this bridge for many, many months. And they finally completed the bridge. Oh, what a simcha gedola! Before you finish the bridge and allow people on the bridge, what do you have to do? You have to test the bridge. So they wanted to test it with 50 wagons to go on this bridge to see if it can cope. So they started sending 10, no problem. 20, easy. 30, no problem. 40, then they got to the last 10. One by one, there were 40 wagons already on the bridge right now. Then they got to the last 10, and they started sending. One started swaying a little bit, started sending another one, a little bit more swaying, but it was still okay. Then they got to 8, 9, until they got to number 10. When they got to number 10, all of a sudden, the whole foundations collapsed, and the whole bridge fell to nothing. All the work and all the effort that they put into it went for absolutely nothing. And he said to his daughter as follows. He said, Baruch Hashem, the Jewish people have lived through the most tremendous and hardest times. We've had wagons bending down on us. We're holding by the last few wagons. Don't cause the wagons to make the bridge collapse. Keep hold of your Yiddishkeit. Keep hold of your emun and betochen in the Rabbi Yisrael Olam, and everything will be okay. Rabbi Sai, the lesson of Shemitah teaches us a tremendous yisoid. And that is, we have to realize, when you have a business and you give up your business, that means you're showing that everything in this world is run by the Ribbono Shel Olam. Shemitah is the time that a person can mechazik himself in emunah, in bitochen, in trust of the Ribbono Shel Olam. And the Meila Be'ez Hashem, when we trust in the Ribbono Shel Olam and we put our full faith in HaKadosh Baruch Hu and to nothing else, and realize that every single thing is dictated by the Ribbono Shel Olam, every blade of grass, says the Gemara, whether it moves this way or this way, is dictated by the Ribbono Shel Olam. Nothing comes by chance. When we have this realization within us, we live a life of simcha. You live a life of happiness, because everything is great, and everything that goes wrong is not really wrong. It's a plan from the Ribbono Shel Olam. You, Rabbi Sai, you will live a different life, I guarantee you. Hashem, the Rabbi Shalom should give us the sachsiyat of the Shemaya to take a habitochen in the Rabbi Shalom, and the Melech, when we habitochen in the Rabbi Shalom, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will give us all of the brachas that come together with that. Join us for the next year, Be'ezah Hashem, probably on Thursday, that will be the actual halachas.